time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 15th of February 2014. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 15th of February, Sharim Brown talked to Tara Swiss Brown about starting school. She found out about the local board consultation process with Chair Paul Walden. She caught up with arts event and tourism organiser Michael Fleck, and she talked to Tanya Batt about Cycle Month activities.
Yeah, good morning. It's Island Life on Saturday, and great. Sharin here. Paul Walden's coming in, chair of the local board, to talk about the engagement process around the local board plan, which is a 3-year initiative which has a lot of opportunities for the public to get involved. So we're going to be talking about that. And then we've got Michael Fleck coming in to talk about some of the things that he's involved with. And then hopefully Tanya Batt's coming in to talk about Bike Week. So we're just waiting for the guests to start arriving, and now we've got Tara Swissa Brown, who's just started school and is in year 6, and who, yes, happens to be my daughter, and so she would like to just have a few words about what it's like at school. So how's it like at school this year?
It's good, and I'm seeming to have a lot of friends this year.
Okay, cool. And how is year 6 different? Because you're in the top... You're in the oldest kids of the primary school, aren't you now?
Yeah.
Mm. And so is that very different?
It just feels like year 5 and 4 again.
Oh, does it? Okay. And so I hear there's been a new strategy where we're not calling the classes but as in room 12 or room 11 or room 9. So what's changed this year?
Well, today the teachers, last year the teachers decided that they said it's boring to call it by room 11 and 12, and I think they decided to call it by, like, food and stuff. So I've got a joint class, and our class is originally called room 11 and 12, and now it's called Cookies and Cream.
Wow, and so is one class cookies and one class cream?
Yeah, our class is cookies and the other class is cream.
Mm, okay. And so as a kid at Te Huarahi, are you finding out a lot about the fact that there's a school rebuild happening? Do you guys hear a bit about that or not so much?
Well, I wasn't hearing a lot about it during the first few weeks at the school.
You haven't yet. Okay, cool. And what are some of the cool things that you're doing in school at the moment?
Well, we've been playing a lot. First week we've been playing like cooperation games, and then now we're playing like during other times we've been doing soccer or stuff like that. And we've also been doing plays, like we've been filming stuff.
Mm. Yes, so I hear you've been doing some filming.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, lovely, good. And have you been writing some stories? What have you been writing stories about?
Well, we've been doing like work stories, but we've been doing storyboards and stuff for the play.
Oh, okay, very professional. Mm. Good. Lovely. So we'll have a lovely year at school.
Mm-hmm. Waiheke Radio.
Right. Okay. Well, here we are with Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Sharon, how are you?
Yeah, good. So Paul and I seem to spend rather a lot of time with each other at the moment on local board stuff, and here we are. We've got quite an exciting little project on at the moment, which is this consultation on the local board plan, which is a consultation process that's starting in about the middle of February, going to the middle of March initially, but then it sort of carries on around what the community would like to see over the next 3 years. That's the sort of the parameters of the local board plan. Yeah, great. So as part of that, it's establishing what the priorities are, and that's what we're going out to consultation for. Mm. And so, do you want to talk a little bit about?
Yeah, I'll just talk briefly. Firstly, it's quite a significant process because there's around 10,000 staff that work for council, between council and their various council-controlled organisations. And so the local plan is the mechanism which empowers them to do their jobs and make sure that it aligns with what the local boards or the community is aspiring toward. So we've identified six priorities. Our first one is building a sustainable and prosperous local economy. Secondly, preserving and enhancing our jewel in the crown, our coastline, harbours, islands and marine areas. Thirdly is places for people, followed by fostering strong, vibrant and engaged communities, and then providing connected, healthy and environmentally friendly transport options. And last but not least is a focus on Matetia, our gateway and harbour. And I think there's a reality now that we need to actually sort of focus some energy around Kennedy Point as well, so we need to have a discussion about that. But really putting an emphasis on those there. And then within all of those categories there's a whole lot of subheadings, but that's just a really sort of brief overview.
So how is the consultation process going to take place? I mean, some of this stuff is not determined by us, it's determined by, you know, Auckland Council or the statutory process or whatever, but what do we know so far about it?
Yeah, so we've decided to go out for a fairly broad community input, and consequently we've arranged a public meeting consultation session around each of these priorities. So starting, over the next fortnight, there'll be, public meetings at the Austin Hall that are specifically focusing on, building a sustainable and prosperous local economy, and that'll be a public meeting that everyone can come to. And it'll be a consensus building and ideas gathering session, which will, enable us to actually work towards developing our draft local board plan. So at this stage, all we've identified is these priorities, and we're looking to sort of embellish those priorities, get some feed in from our community. Excuse me, that's my wrist thumping the table.
Oh, right, okay.
And, and then from that we can build a really good draft plan that, because if we can get a plan that's got the buy-in of the community, it'd be great.
Lovely.
Yep.
And I think the other thing that's quite interesting about this process is it's sort of organised around the priorities.
Mm.
So what we're hoping is that people who are interested, for example, in economy and or tourism or whatever might come to that meeting, and it's clearly kind of flagged as being of interest for those people, and there might be other people, like for example, who are interested in sustainability and their business and etc., who might come as well as some of the bigger
There's all sorts of overlays and crossovers, but really by breaking it down and holding a series of six consultations on this, it means in this situation with business and economy and tourism, that all of our local business owners, be they tradesmen, that might be saying, okay, we want to see more council spending spent with local contractors. It might be tourist operators saying, we need more tourists, or we need tourists in wintertime and not so much in summertime. It could be the community coming along and saying, look, we're needing to think a little bit differently about how people are moving around, and we need to sort out our transport infrastructure to and from the ferry so people can actually walk up to the local vineyards. And that was a presentation we had from a local from Cable Bay at our last board meeting, was saying people hop off the ferry and there's nothing that tells them where they can walk to, what vineyards are accessible and which ones they can cycle to and whatever else. So there's a whole myriad of things which aren't rocket scientists rocket science, but it's just a matter of getting the right people around the table to resolve.
And I guess we're also hoping that we can develop some of those, databases and communities of interest that can then, work together as well.
Yep.
And I guess there'll also be some overlay, won't there? Because obviously if you're interested in economic development and tourism, some of that will be around transport infrastructure, but there is actually a separate one which deals with transport, so you might find that you're coming to two different sessions, or that there's a little bit of overlap in the sessions. But we're really hoping that people come and share their ideas.
Well, I think the best, the best foundation for a plan is, getting the views of people that are most affected and invested. And, you know, so rather than us or the council or us empowering council officers to present a draft plan, this is a much better way to go about it.
Right, okay. And I was just wondering, is there a survey that's going out with this?
Yeah, so very shortly they should be arriving through various channels, I think online, by post, and otherwise a survey which is very much just a very brief look at our priorities and asking people for feedback as to whether they feel that we're on track with that. So, you know, it's quite an exhaustive and extensive consultation process, but we've flagged very strongly up front to council staff that, you know, we're committed to getting the best grassroots input in at the start rather than having a shit fight at the end of it over, what we can take in or take out. But, you know, let's build that consensus. Let's get the ideas down now and consolidate them.
Mm. And so there'll be this series of meetings, and then that's a kind of informal process of consultation, and then the results of the survey come back in, and then we sort of, on the basis of that, I think, tweak the document.
We'll develop a formal draft, and that will go out for the official consultation through the, you know, the council special consultative procedure.
Mm. So you actually have two bites of the cherry. So you can either come along informally and share some of those ideas, or you can then submit formally on the draft.
Totally. Mm. Yep.
Lovely. Good. And when is that happening? I don't know if we've got the dates now, but it's sometime around June or July.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's
consultation
rolls over the next 4 months or so. Yeah, and it's a little bit of a moving feast. It seems to change from day to day.
Mm.
Certainly the council staff are, you know, trying to coordinate a huge body of people with, you know, their various 21 local boards and, you know, councillors that need to be involved in the process and that's, it's...
Right. Okay, great. Mm. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about or say about...
Yeah, I spent a bit of time yesterday at a session in town looking at what's called the Maine Island Trail Association.
And so that's from Maine, isn't it?
It's on the coastline of Maine. So Maine is, I believe, the smallest state of the states, and it's very high up north on their western seaboard, up towards Canada. So, but there's some similarities with the Hauraki Gulf and the sort of islands around us, in that and our coastal property. What they began to experience over the last, starting sort of 30-odd years ago was, private property trespassers, prosecuted signs going up as the land ownership's changing and people are getting excluded from land which they had been used to enjoying for generations. And so a group of people established this Maine Island Trail Association. You can find it online at mita.org. And essentially they sought to promote sustainable opportunities for people to get out and kayak or sail or boat up and down the coastline and find places to stay. And it's quite a fascinating thing. It's now got, you know, thousands of members of this association. They've got five full-time staff. They do all sorts of beach cleanups in coordination with the Coast Guard and volunteers, their fishing communities, but they also have managed to negotiate free access for to 200 or over 200 islands up and down the coastline. So members of their association can paddle or sail or kayak however which way down the coast or up the coast and find somewhere to stay. And I think there's some wonderful opportunities for us to think about exploring within the Gulf here and around Waiheke. So that was a very encouraging to see the council opening their mind to such opportunities. So that's one of the things I think that we're looking to bring out of our local board plan, is looking at opportunities in the Gulf, really to promote. So the council have recently established a kayak trail down the southern coastline from Duda's Beach Regional Park, down to Waitawa around the Cleveland coast. But there's no reason that we couldn't have one heading off from, say, Mission Bay or St Heliers across to Browns Island, across to Moruihe, and various locations around the coastline of Waiheke. And what they're finding is that this sort of tourism is actually bringing substantial money into their economy in Maine. And I think there's wonderful opportunities there that aren't going to burden our you know, our roads and our infrastructure. It's, you know, bringing nice active people around.
I think it's quite interesting to see that in, around Auckland, I noticed even with Bike Week, or there are a whole load of bike events over the summer as well, that Auckland itself seems to be increasingly on, you know, encouraging people who've never biked to start biking, you know, and are opening up greenways. And it would be lovely to see more of that happening here. I mean, people do anyway because it's a beautiful island, but but supporting them to have that kind of holiday would be great.
Cool. Okay.
Great. Lovely. Okay. Well, yes, DJing, producing, chatting, it's all happening at Waiheke Radio behind the scenes.
The five arms of Sharon Brown. Great. Working frantically. Well done.
Anyway, well done. And thanks a lot for coming in. And yes. And so, oh, actually, you know, I would like to talk to you about some of the changes of the local board meetings.
Oh, yes.
And how that's going, because we've kind of made that transition from... you know, one meeting a month to two meetings a month. Any thoughts on how that's going?
Oh, it's a work in progress. I mean, certainly it's been a breath of fresh air being able to finish a decision-making meeting at a reasonable hour. And that's been good. You know, a big part of the intent was to be doing more and more of our what would conventionally be done in council sort of or local board closed-door workshops in a public meeting. But that requires a significant cultural shift for the administration. So, you know, we have got an ongoing challenge.
But I have to say it's been really nice finishing early.
Oh, totally.
Means that you can, you know, people aren't sort of really tired when they're making decisions, which is great. I thought it was quite interesting that, you know, the public pretty much left after public forum. And I just thought, oh, it's a shame because there were some really interesting things that came up through some of the reports. And
yeah, but that's
is
always,
that a perception that,
oh,
that
no,
people
look, I mean, that was always
stay through after public forum? I was just wondering.
Interesting. I mean, that is or was a perception. And, you know, save probably the last two years on the last board, you know, where we had I mean, I was blessed to have a group of supporters that came and supported me through the entire meeting, because it was pretty rough going at times. But, you know, but normally for the few years that I've been involved in council meetings, there hasn't been generally anyone that would stay beyond public forum.
Right.
And, you know, and that's just the reality of life.
I think it's a real shame.
Well, it is a shame, but I think also, too, it's a reflection that people are comfortable with the decision makers that are around the table, that they're happy to, you know, leave them be. And really, it's an accountability thing. I've found that, you know, people are there and they'll sit through the meeting if there's something they're concerned about.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
right,
so
okay.
I think it's a good thing. But actually, while you're here, I mean, how are you finding life on the local board, Sharon?
Well, I'm finding it really, really interesting. Yep. I just think it's really interesting.
What's your high point?
Well, I think high points are things like finding out about the way things work, and always having been on the outside before, not really knowing how things work. But then there are some really cool stuff, like, you know, the library visit. I really enjoyed going around the library and seeing it. And and I find it quite fascinating working with people. I just find that aspect of it really, really interesting. And the kind of, you know, because I think essentially a lot of the stuff we do is around people, and it's around, you know, the public feeling that they're heard, and it's around, you know, us being able to communicate what we need with council officers, and you know, different people having different understanding of what's expected of local board members or of officers or whatever, and how we kind of get beyond that to get the best that we can, and so that everyone's working on the same page. It's all coming thick and fast, I find. You know, there just seems to be so many different areas that we're working in and upskilling in. But it's really fascinating.
And I think that's, you know, that will ease off in time. I mean, what we're seeing is a cultural change as far as how the council's dealing with Waiheke. And so, you know, there is just a myriad of questions and council officers that are needing direction and support.
And I think, you know, being part of Auckland Council, although we're always quite wary as Waiheke, in some ways it also presents us with lots of opportunities, in the sense that if we know how to access the officers and get the best out of them, we can actually achieve... You know, there are huge resources available in council to help us in terms of community development or arts development or...
Outstanding. There's tremendous resources there,
And so that's quite exciting, thinking about how that can kind of feed into the local, you know, into the things we do locally.
I think that was something that I found quite fascinating was when we met the new community development worker that's dedicated to the island. And, you know, there's a whole lot of work streams which community development do right around the Auckland region. And, you know, I think there's 5 core work streams. You know, but some of the things that our community's been, you know, pushing to do and funding through other local board slips funding or discretionary funding or volunteer funding or whatever, things like, you know, developing community gardens and roadside fruit tree planting, this sort of thing. And there's a whole team of council that have got a budget and staff and resources to do it, but for whatever reason they haven't felt that they're empowered to do it on the island.
Mm.
So that was just that was one of my highlights, was really seeing that enthusiasm within that department, that that call was sort of like we've been unleashed, we can actually get on and do our business.
No, definitely. And of course, you know, as events portfolio holder or arts, or I just find some of that stuff really interesting, how we can match up community development with events. And so we maybe think of how we have a whole range of events throughout the year that are supported, that we support or empower or support community organisations to put some of these things on, and then islanders and visitors get the chance to experience lots of different things.
Hey, is it true that you're looking to conquer John Key?
Conquer John Key?
Yeah, take over the Prime Ministership in New Zealand.
What? What are you talking about?
Sorry.
Is it true that he's a reptile? Oh, did you see that? I thought that was hilarious that they couldn't prove that he wasn't a reptile. I just thought, oh, that's really interesting.
Fantastic.
So, okay, great. But yes, so on we go.
Yep.
Right. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the show and sharing some of those thoughts with us.
Cool. That's
been
fun. And
have a lovely weekend.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you by Island, art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac, Ocean View Road, Oniroa.
Okay, great. Well, here I am back with Michael Fleck, who's a long-time Island resident and is here to talk about some of the projects that he's involved with. Hi, Michael.
Good morning.
So you need to be close up to the mic there. Yeah.
Good
morning. A little bit closer.
And thank you for having me on your show.
Great.
Yay.
So, what's been happening?
Well, many things continue to arise. If you look around us here in the island and beyond, and my background has been in event production, design, management, beginning with some time with the Arts Council of New Zealand in managing touring programs for New Zealand performing artists and helping communities raise their creative profile with various functions and venues and, you know, visiting performing artists. And then on my own, I've been, over the past 15 years, shaping various what we call sacred journeys for visitors to New Zealand and for New Zealanders to very special sites throughout the country, usually accompanied by Maori guides who know the sites well, and also including in the itineraries various visits to creative people in New Zealand, people that are really stamping their individuality and bringing forward a New Zealand essence to what's evolving in our great multiculture in this country.
Mm.
I've been on Waiheke since 2002. It feels truly very much like home, and it's a microcosm of what I've seen throughout New Zealand in many ways, although we don't have the Alps, but that's okay. Thank you. And I'm very enthusiastic about the unique community culture that I've seen evolved here in the short time that I've been here. I know it's been seeded and planted for years, decades, by many people, and I get great joy out of working with, supporting whatever is going on here when I'm here, when I'm not on the road with a tour group. So I'm interested in how Waiheke can position itself for the right kind of tourism, I don't even like that word, but for attracting visitors who are both nurtured and healed by what is here and also can contribute and help us grow so that we're not an isolated, insulated entity, but we're interactive at sharing our best and attracting some of the best that is brought here from other places.
And so, certainly I know the people who've been on your journeys have always come back raving about them and just really felt that they'd had a unique experience.
Yeah, well, thank you. I haven't heard too many raves, but I get generally good compliments and smiles and not too many bad marks. And I think people find us through word of mouth, which is the best promotion. I don't advertise. And with people here in the islands, such as Pulawai Ormsby and Lucia de Gil, we're looking at designing very unique Waiheke tours, journeys for people. We call them sacred journeys because it's an inner journey as well as moving around to place to place. It isn't just a tiki tour and that you hop on a bus and do this and that. And we really bring people to places and allow a space for people's, for something inside of them to be touched by the place and to unfold and say, aha, one of those moments, and there's something here. And there's something there outside and something here inside that I haven't paid attention to.
Yeah. I never thought of visiting a place in that way.
Yeah. In fact, one of the things I'm very involved in for many years, since we put together a conference in 1989 at the university called the Living Earth Conference and trying to introduce the Gaia hypothesis to the general public, which is now a theory. It's no longer a hypothesis. The theory is that this planet that we have arisen from is a living organism. And the more we understand and experience that intimately in every cell, the more we will easily take to things that, you know, we used to be called environmentalism, saving the planet, recycling. This is just should be second nature, and it won't be a battle and a struggle, but we need to awaken that dimension of us that has been breathed by this planet since the moment of our first breath. You know, that's how intimate the connection is, but we've been asleep, many of us, for so long.
Oh, interesting.
And I love the islands waking up, you know, and waking people up to it. And so in our journeys, we hopefully take people to places where they'll get that aha, that little breath, that little wake up and go, ah, yeah, this is, I really feel, there's something about this place, New Zealand, that really, and it isn't just us, it's something about New Zealand too. You know, it's unique.
So what
know.
Is the what are the things that resonate for you in Waiheke or in New Zealand?
Well,
you've obviously done a lot of traveling. So.
I've been fortunate to see much of the country, different places that many people don't get to. First of all, the diversity. Secondly, the nature of our ecosystem. Someone pointed out to me some years ago that our forests and our bush, the living species there tend to cooperate and share resources, sunshine, soil nutrients, and so on, as opposed to most other forest systems on the planet where there is a competition. And that very model in the natural world seems to me to guide us and indicate to us how we can cooperate and share our resources. And I think what has evolved through Treaty of Waitangi and many other cultures visiting and being woven into this country, it speaks a very harmonious and peaceful way of evolving together, having our own
version. Is that true, though? I mean, all species compete
at some
for
level,
the space?
Yeah, well, it's
in the sense that they're competing for the last berries on the tree, or, you know, the hawk is still going to sort of munch on the... tui or whatever.
With the bird life and other, you know, animal species, there is that level, but we're talking about the plant species primarily.
Right.
And I had this confirmed, I heard this about 15 years ago from a man who's done a lot of deep research into the ecosystems, and then I had it confirmed by a Native American healer who came here years after he retired from working with the U.S. Special Forces, and he had traveled in many ecosystems on the planet. And he, as a Native American, he said, this is different here. This is not like the forest in the U.S. or the forest in Vietnam or wherever he's been. He said, this is... And that's how he phrased it, too. He said, there's cooperation here.
Oh, okay.
And maybe that's something that we feel in the bush. Whatever words we put on it, there's something different here. You know, you can't deny that. You know, we can make it sound however groovy we want. But
And other things that you notice that you...
Well, of course, you notice how people respond to various places, especially the ones you take them to repeatedly. For example, we like to go to a place called the Temple of the Four Winds, Timaringa, which is northwest of Lake Taupo, near a village called Bennydale. And in 1983, there was a sacred Maori temple constructed of wood that burnt down, burnt to the ground, we don't know how. And apparently, from all remaining records, it was designed according to the principles of sacred geometry, same principles in the Great Pyramids and Stonehenge and so on. And where that knowledge came from is a good question. But what remains there on that site, which is now simply a cruciform shape in the ground where people leave their mementos, their pieces of green stone or shells or whatever moves them, people are still touched by that energy. And that, to me, that's significant. We don't even tell them the history or the story. We say, let's go here and see what happens to you. And then they come away and say, okay, I felt this and I felt, you know, so. Yeah, that's the other thing we do with our journeys. We don't program people. You know, we say, let's go each day and be open. Drop what you came from. See what happens.
It's word of mouth, but how else do you access people to come on these journeys? Because it sounds like it's quite a specific thing. Like, I can't imagine my parents being over enthralled at, you know, not knowing what the program is and where they're going, and then being told that it's an inner journey as well as what they're going to have a look at. I just don't see that really appealing to them.
Well,
it
may not be for them. But usually in the itinerary, which is developed with the group leader, we cover a lot of bases. There's a day or several half days for shopping because people need to do that, especially if they're in the country for the first time. You know, they want to take things home. And there are many sites that we visit, not a lot, but many that are very well known to people. And, oh, yeah, we have to go to Lake Taupo. We have to see Lake Tarawera and where, you know, the eruption happened. If that's what they want, that's going to be on the itinerary. Along the way, we'll say, we're going to stop here. There's a wall, an ancient wall in the forest here near Taupo. Let's go look at it, see what you think. You know, is it man-made? Is that a natural phenomenon? You know, we just slip these things in. If they're, as your parents, you know.
Yeah.
And then the feedback comes.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, remember our friend Simona, who lived in the island for many years?
In this house.
Yes, indeed. And she once worked with me as a translator for a group of 50 Italian film students from the largest film school in Italy. And they said to me, they found me through word of mouth, and they said, we have these graduate film students mostly interested in working in design who want to have a Lord of the Rings experience. They also want to have a Maori cultural experience. They want to see how the Maori designed and expressed their culture. And so that was quite an ask to put the two together, and it worked. You know, we went to the Peter Jackson, the Weta Studios in Wellington. We did a half a day on the Whanganui River and walked with Maori guides. And, you know, it was just a bit of everything. So it really depends on the group and what, or the individuals. Sometimes it'll be one or two people that will find me and say, I'd like to do this or that.
Mm.
So that's mostly what I've been doing when I'm not seen on the island.
Right. Oh, okay. No, interesting. And you've got some things there that you're quite interested in.
This is something coming up next weekend. It's not a Waiheke event, although there are a number of Waiheke people involved. It's called the Voices of Sacred Earth Eco Festival. It's the second annual one. It's at a beautiful retreat center in Albany called Kauai Purapura. And it has a host of wisdom carriers, shamanic teachers, New Zealand artists, musicians from overseas. There'll be a sweat lodge, a Native American ceremony, healers, and so on, for two full days and a Friday evening. It's 21 through 23 February. And again, their primary focus is to recognize and bring into us the experience that the earth that we inhabit, this planet, is a living, intelligent organism. As we are when we're awake, when we remember. Yeah, so that's one of my great passions, is to help cultivate and extend that awareness.
Mm. Well, it always seems to me if you're kind to the earth, then you can be kind to yourself. I think sometimes, you know, the whole thing of, like, you know, whole-scale plundering of beautiful natural resources, you know, is a reflection on some of the values we have ourselves, that, you know, somehow open-cast mining would be acceptable, and yet it's so ugly. And I know that we use, I'm not saying that, you know, we shouldn't use cars or we shouldn't, you know, drive around, but I think it's around being aware around how many resources we can use and how far we're prepared to go to get those resources.
Mm. Yes, yes. And looking at new ways of creating resources out of what is already existing rather than extracting something that's rapidly disappearing and burning it up, and polluting ourselves in the process.
Mm. Yeah. And so there was a launch at Planet yesterday, you were saying?
Yes, it's a new gathering place in Ostend, right on the main road, Belgium Road number 7. And it had a startup a few years ago, and then the owners went overseas. Now, the new model is slightly different. It's conceived, as you can see on the logo, the new logo. It's very nice above the opening, above the doorway. It says, create, connect, food, art, music. And that may not all be happening at once, but that is the general vibration that is ambiance that's being created in there. And they opened an exhibition last night called For the Love of Wood. Various island sculptors and carvers. It's magnificent. And it's just because the interior and a bit of the exterior has a Moroccan theme, and there is wood as well as mosaic. The wood art, it resonates beautifully in that atmosphere.
Mm.
And it's a little cafe, open 5 days a week. It's a place for meetings, functions, concerts. Taizé singing starting tomorrow night for 3 weeks.
What's Taizé?
Taizé is a monastery in the south of France,
T-A-I-Z-E,
where the monks have developed a very exquisite choral sacred chant. And people come from all over the world to experience it and have learned some of the chants and now spread them around.
Oh, okay.
So people just love to sing. Just like people love to chant Indian yoga mantras.
And so where can one find out about what's going on at Planet?
They have a little ad now in the Gulf News every week of what's on coming up. It was in this week's issue. And, of course, one can always just drive by and look at the notice board. There's also a community resource board taking place in the back veranda where people can post and their business cards or links to sustainable resources on the island, people, services, places that we need to know about to more tightly weave what's evolving here.
So I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and I think it's a word that's been sustainable. It's a word that seems to have been colonized, so it's a little bit like, you know, you sort of think, is that really something that I associate with sustainability?
Yeah.
And so what do you have some sort of understanding of what sustainability means, or any thoughts around the word?
It's interesting. Next weekend, they've asked me to present a workshop at this Eco Festival, and the subtitle of my workshop is Strategies Beyond Sustainability. My position is very little that any of us are doing, small scale, is sustainable. In even the short term. So we really need to look at some radical solutions and not rely on that word or that practice even. We need to look at something much deeper, you know, much more interactive, looking at how the planet's own ecosystems balance and manage each other so well before we came along. So it's something I haven't verbalized. I want to explore that in the workshop with people. But I'm definitely not just a sustainability activist. That's so easy, as you say, to colonize and to put in a pigeonhole, and then, that's taken care of, and we'll just burn some more fuel.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, and I was quite interested to go to something at Auckland Council around stormwater management.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how a lot of the strategies around that have always, since the Industrial Revolution, have always been around seeing stormwater as a problem that needs to be taken away as quickly as possible. And so they've got all these concrete solutions, which are, you know, making pipes bigger
concrete.
And bigger, I think they call them gray, all that stuff around concrete, they were calling like gray solutions. And then they were saying, well, you know, but if you look at the way nature works, you know, you've got wetlands that naturally take water, you know, filter water, and if it's not coming at it as in great bucket loads, then it can manage it more easily. And I thought that was really interesting that something like Auckland Council, which is such a monolith organization, would be starting to think about, actually, these are cheaper, greener, ways of addressing some of the problems we have. So I thought that was quite hopeful.
That's a good sign. They've probably taken note from what's happening in the UK with their floods and then the poor management of land use and river clearing and so on that's been going on. It's just, yeah, we need to look at it. We're definitely a water nation.
Great. Okay. Hey. Well, thank you very much for coming in.
Great. Thank you, Shireen.
Lovely.
Have a good weekend.
Okay. So that was Michael Fleck talking about some of the things that he's involved with around events and sacred journeys. And
you're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Okay. Great. Another exciting morning at Waiheke Radio. But Tanya's here. So we're going to cheer up about that. Lovely. Hi.
Morning, Sharon. You're lucky we weren't talking about anything too explicit.
Yes, right. And it was just, oh, you're just such a breath of fresh air. It was just lovely just seeing you cycling through and you've got this bright flowery dress on it's just wonderful.
Oh, that's my high-vis look.
Yes. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So, bike month.
Yes.
Tell us about what's been going on for bike month.
Well, I guess we just got halfway through bike month. We had a fantastic time last Sunday here. On Waiheke Island, we had our Waiheke Cycle Fest down at the Blackpool School Reserve. That's the second year that the Once Upon an Island Trust has organised that, and I think it's just going to go from strength to strength. Cool people on cool bikes turn up and do fun things. I mean, really, it's kind of a it couldn't go wrong, really. Yeah. So we had a great time down there with the obstacle courses and great support from biking businesses and cycle interest groups such as Core and eCycles. And hike bike aqua. So it was a great day.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Great.
But cycle things are happening all over New Zealand for bike month. It used to be a week, as I was explaining to you, but such is the interest in cycling that it's now a whole month.
Mm. Yeah. And so tell us about the trail.
That's right.
Really, well,
as I whizzed in from Awa'awaroa this morning on the Great Orange Bike, I was thinking I should really stop and check that the stamps are still there. I'm hoping people are being kind and leaving the stamps should they find them when they're not on the trail. But it's called the Two Wheel Treasure Trail. And it's sort of like treasure hunting on the back of your bicycle.
I love that kind of thing.
I do too. I feel really lucky that I get to do all the things that I love to do. So I picked a cycle family-friendly course. So it stretches from Alison Park, which is where the first clue is, all the way around to the Surfdale Community Hall, actually the food forest out the back there. So I got to actually put all some of my favourite spots, including the Tahurahi Reserve down there in front of the Marae and the Blackpool Community Gardens and the Esplanade. So, there's seven stations that you basically need to find. You need to come and pick your entry card up from the library because you need the card to record your stamps on. Don't think you can just find one stamp and stamp all seven because there's seven different stamps and I will know that you have cheated. Then you will be disqualified. So when you've finished, you bring your card back up to the library. They're collecting them in a box up there and we'll draw them on Tuesday the 25th at our Cycle to the Cinema evening at the Waiheke Community Cinema.
So how does it... how do we know we found something?
Oh, well, there's a clue. There's seven clues on the cards, and you'll find a little box with a stamp in it.
At the place indicated by the clue.
That's right,
oh,
yeah. So
exciting.
You have to do a little bit of treasure hunting around when you get to the place.
Lovely. Yeah. So it'll be clear from the library card which kind of route one might need to follow to be able to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Tara, we need you to go down to the library and pick up the library treasure trail cards.
Yeah.
Oh,
I've talked to a few people who've done it. It's kind of based on an old, it was a British idea called letterboxing that was very popular in the 1800s. When I was developing my literacy show, which was a storytelling piece all about the art of letter writing, I came across this thing called letterboxing, which was where people go around, find stamps and put them in little books or cards or leave messages. Or geocaching, of course, is the...
What's that?
Sharon, where have you
really?
Been? Oh,
okay,
my goodness.
No,
too much time spent at Waiheke Community Board meetings.
Oh, tell me about it. That's why I've had any inspiration.
That's right. Yeah. I should have a geocaching session with the Waiheke Community Board. It's where you get coordinates on your phone, and basically people hide these little caches all over the world. You can do geocaches anywhere. And it's exactly the same thing. You search for treasure, hunt, find a little box. And usually with geocaching, you can take something out, but you have to put something of equal value back in again.
Okay.
So it's great.
Well,
I've got one of my brothers is mad keen keen on geocaching, he drags me off whenever I'm with him.
Oh, wow. So you can actually get onto some sort of website something.
It's like train spotting.
Oh,
geocachers
really?
Are like twitchers of, you know, those sorts of things. They're a bit obsessive. I think, you know, there's sort of, you know, as ever, there's always a nasty commercial kind of lump that always grows with good ideas. And you can go and buy, you know, standard geocaching gifts to put in and out of your little box. You know, originally,
really?
You just made it up,
yeah,
put
yeah,
your
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
in, but now, you know, you can standardize it with.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, we don't have any of that. We just got good old fashioned stamps in boxes that you need to put back once you found them and recorded them on your card. And we've got some very cool prizes. eCycles has donated an electric bike picnic for two.
Wow.
And Y Kitchen is providing the yummy food with that. Mm. Beautiful cane cycle basket.
Mm.
Waiheke Island Coffee are giving us some free coffee. So there's lots of cool prizes.
Great. So what other events are there for Bike Month?
Well, there's the Cycle to the Cinema. That's on Tuesday, the 25th at 7:30 p.m. And we're showing a documentary called Bikes for Africa. And I've got it sitting in the office. I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I've seen the shorts and it looks very cool. It's actually about a young New Zealand man whose name was Hap. And he kind of got this into his head that he would work and travel through all the continents on the world by the time he was 30. Anyway, this is particular chapter is his cycle adventure in Africa and Namibia. And there's an organisation called Bikes for Humanity. There's a chapter in Auckland as well, but they're operating all over the world. And basically they take bikes, excess bikes, from you know, where they're not being made good use of, and put them in shipping containers and take them into communities, often in developing nations, and work with local communities there. So you've got bike maintenance, because often one of the issues around providing aid of any kind is if you don't provide the skill set that goes with the resources, then you might as well
not bother.
So, that it's about Hap's adventure out to Namibia with a container full
Namibia.
Of...
Namibia? Is that Namibia or is that somewhere else?
That's my makeup. yes. Let's try that.
Blonde moment.
That's right, yes. More oxygen needed in the brain after my cycle. Yes, that place. And
somewhere in Africa.
That's
we think it's the south.
Oh, God, it's embarrassing, isn't it? Very bad, yes. As a storyteller, I make stuff up all the time. I'm very bad at merging words together. Yes, and working with a local cycle group there, getting these bikes and talking to the people who receive these bikes and what a difference it makes in their lives. Because ever since the invention of the bicycle, it's been a piece of machinery, the most noble invention, said J.F. Kennedy, that's changed the lives of people. Suddenly you're able to do things. So, for example, you know, young girls who work at home and are responsible for siblings and collecting water found that, you know, with all the chores they had to do at home, they couldn't get to school on time. They get a bicycle, they can do all that and they can cover that distance and you know, complete their education. Mm. People can get health, get to health services that they just wouldn't be able to. Mm. Quite incredible stories. You know, we wouldn't think of, you know, putting our child on a bike and cycling 55 kilometres to get to a hospital, but these are the incredible stories some of these people. So it's a great documentary. It's $10, 7:30, and there'll be some, you know, mad cycling antics as well. So
great.
And all the proceeds will be going to Bikes for Humanity. Mm. So
lovely.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, sounds incredible. It just made me think of The Bicycle Thief. I don't know if you've ever seen that film. It's a 1940s film, but it's about the freedom and the opportunity created by having a bike in post-war Italy.
Mm.
And it's quite interesting because it parallels the whole use of cars. The films of the same era from the States are all celebrating the car and the freedom created by having a car.
Yes, yes.
And it's really interesting to see those kind of two parallel worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been doing a lot of research around the history of biking and in particular the impact cycling had on women, because what's very interesting is the development of the bicycle and the history of women's emancipation are pretty much two wheels that run alongside each other. And a lot of the early feminists who were part of the suffrage movement were also very keen cyclists, and those who were in America were also involved with the abolition movement as well.
Of course, and a lot of them were pictured on bikes,
yes,
weren't they? Because it
course,
was such a sense of freedom.
Yes, that's right.
I've never actually made that connection.
And for me, that's, I've been putting the Bell on a Bike, which is this Cycle to Your Home, and well, it's actually quite a few things. There's a children's show, and then there's a Cycle to Your Home for adults show.
Oh yes, so tell us about that, because yes. I've seen that advertised.
Yes, yes. So that's kind of I start doing that this. Well, actually, I start it tonight. I'm doing a bit of a dress rehearsal, experimenting on my neighbours out at Awaroa this evening. So we're having a bit of a run through, but then I start performing it. This week and the week.
So I thought it was a private performance.
Yes, it is. That's
right.
Oh,
okay, right. So
that's
you're not exactly doing it, for example, in a venue.
No, no. Okay. Though I do think Planet is hosting. I just need to confirm that with Laura on Thursday night, Thursday
oh,
the 28th.
Okay.
So that might be a place that if people were interested in going along, they could make a booking. It's designed for small audiences.
Mm.
So, you know, 20, 25 people. So it's not really a theatre going piece. And yeah, it's not too late to invite me into your home. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't invite me into their home, but I will leave.
Into my home.
Well, it's actually not just me, it's me and the bicycle and the gypsy caravan, of course, which you've probably seen.
Yes.
My latest, greatest delight, beautifully crafted by Don Stoddard here on the island and painted by artist and friend Helen Bacon. So that's been not only the cycle sensation of Waiheke of late, but I did take it across for the Cyclovia over in Auckland
yes,
as well.
And how was that? Because that was another event I missed. I was absolutely gutted to miss those.
Yeah. Well, this is the first Cyclovia we've had in New Zealand, but I discovered that it is 40 years old as an event that takes place all over the world, and started in Bogota in Colombia of all places. And it's a Spanish word that basically means, you know, the joy or the freedom that comes from cycling. We need a word like that in English, really.
It means cycleway, doesn't it?
Yes.
But I guess it's just replacing the roads with, and then all the connotations of that.
Yeah.
But as Tom Ransom pointed out, we had ours before they had theirs, because we had our, we had the day when the Esplanade was closed as an experiment.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a cyclovia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we are kind of, you know, approaching probably a little way off critical mass, but, you know, I think communities have had, you know, events like this, but they're growing, and the support for them at a local government and national is growing, and that's fantastic to
Absolutely.
See.
Absolutely. The kinds of things that are being said at Auckland Transport now around promoting cycling, it's not huge, and they're still prioritising cars, but there's an increasing awareness of the fact that these spaces need to be shared more effectively.
Mm.
So that's wonderful. Now, lastly, I'm quite interested in the whole notion of e-cycles.
Yes.
Because, especially for Waiheke, it must be like a huge... What do you notice? Because you cycled before having an e-cycle.
Yeah.
And I'm inspired to try and get one now.
Now, they're great. I think the thing about e-cycles, it's they're going to see a lot of people getting on bikes who might have previously kind of looked at the hill or had kind of health issues and thought, or getting of an age where they were thinking, you know, my bike days are over. But the e-cycles Waiheke business was started by Rob Varson down in Blackpool there. Now, I'm useless usually at last name, so I just can't think of what Chris's last
Chris
name
has
is.
Got a long, but it's Chris and Darlene.
Chris and Darlene. Chris and Darlene.
Chris and Darlene.
have taken over,
up in the phone book.
Over the business with a great deal of enthusiasm, which is great news for Rob. And I think they were telling me they've already sold like 60 or 70 electric bikes on
have
the
they?
Island in the last year. Mm. For me, it's been brilliant. I mean, I cycled a normal kind of semi-normal bicycle around Waiheke for several years. But when I moved out to Awaroa with the Onatangi Hill there and, you know, it's just... Mentally, it was kind of
it's
an obstacle.
Much,
it was like,
it?
I'd think, oh no, I'm going to have a short nap, a long shower and a change of clothes by the time I get to Onirua. So, yeah, the e-bike has made cycling for me a commutable option from Awaroa. And, you know, there's all different sorts of e-cycles. And if you go down to see Rob and Chris, they'll show you different types. And they have some great deals for Waiheke residents. They really want to support local
concept.
Yeah, local people getting onto electric bikes. And, of course, they've got the electric bike hire for visitors and for why not go and, you know, if you've got visitors coming to the island, what a great way to take them around to see the island. And it's, you know, it's novel now, but I actually think that electrical bicycles, the technology is improving with them all the time, and it's going to be quickly become a very realistic and affordable option for many people.
Well, anecdotally, you can just see many, many more people cycling
already
about on their electric bikes.
To think that, you know, that's what, 60, 70 more people who are riding bikes just as a result of having the electric bikes business here on the island. So, and for older people as well. And I think that's how Rob came to it. He's nearly 80 and couldn't ride a bicycle and really found it difficult to walk, but with the support that you get from electric bicycle. Some people are under the impression that I might just sit there, not do anything, but you do pedal, and of course the more you pedal, the more you conserve your battery. So you know, you make choices, especially when you've got to do a long cycle like mine, about when you're going to use your energy. It's a good kind of little advertisement for sustainability anyway. Choose use of energy wisely.
Excellent.
Yeah, so
lovely. Okay, well, Tanya, have a great bike month. So how long can we do the bike trail for?
Until that Tuesday.
Okay,
so
which is
really is the 24th.
Is it next Tuesday?
Yeah, so you've basically got a week.
Okay, terrific.
Yeah.
And lovely. And thanks for organising all the events for Bike Month. It's lovely to have someone holding that space for the rest of us to be able to enjoy those events.
Well, a bike shared is a pleasure doubled.
Great. Good. Thank you. Okay, so that's the end of Island Life. Thank you to all our guests and Tanya. And have a lovely weekend. That's it from me, Shrin, on Island Life.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.